Chapter 43. Vaughn spent a medicinal month in Cordula's Manhattan flat on Alexis Avenue. She dutifully visited her mother at their Malbrook Castle two or three times a week, unescorted by Vaughn either there or to the numerous social flits she attended in town, being a frivolous, fun-loving little thing. But some parties she canceled and resolutely avoided seeing her latest lover, the fashionable psychotechnician Dr. F. S. Fraser, a cousin of the late P. DePee's fortunate fellow soldier. Several times, Vaughn talked on the Dorophone with his father, who pursued an extensive study of Mexican spas and spices, and did several errands for him in town. He often took Cordula to French restaurants, English movies, and Varangian tragedies, all of which was most satisfying, for she relished every morsel, every sip, every jest, every sob, and he found ravishing the velvety rose of her cheeks and the azure pure iris of her festively painted eyes, to which indigo black thick lashes, lengthening and upcurving at the outer canthus, added what fashion called the harlequin slant. One Sunday, while Cordula was still lolling in her perfumed bath, a lovely, oddly unfamiliar sight which he delighted in twice a day, Vaughn in the nude, as his new sweetheart drolly genteelized naked, attempted for the first time after a month's abstinence to walk on his hands. He felt strong and fit and blithely turned over to the first position in the middle of the sun-drenched terrace. Next moment he was sprawling on his back. He tried again and lost his balance at once. He had the terrifying, albeit illusionary, feeling that his left arm was now shorter than his right, and Vaughn wondered wryly if he ever would be able to dance on his hands again. King Wing had warned him that two or three months without practice might result in an irretrievable loss of the rare art. On the same day, the two nasty little incidents thus remained linked up in his mind forever, Vaughn happened to answer the phone. A deep, hollow voice, which he thought was a man's, wanted Cordula. But the caller turned out to be an old schoolmate, and Cordula feigned limpid delight while making big eyes at Vaughn over the receiver and invented a number of unconvincing engagements. "It's a gruesome girl," she cried after the melodious adieu. "Her name is Vonda Broom, and I learned only recently what I never suspected at school. She's a regular Trebatka. Poor Grace Ermanen tells me that Vonda used to make constant passes at her and at another girl. That's her picture here," continued Cordula with a quick change of tone, producing a daintily bound and prettily printed graduation album of spring, 1887, which Vaughn had seen at artists, but in which she had not noticed the somber, beetle-browed, unhappy face of that particular girl. And now it did not matter anymore, and Cordula quickly popped the book back into a drawer. But he remembered very well that among the various more or less coy contributions, it contained a clever pastiche by Ada Veen, mimicking Tolstoy's paragraph rhythm and chapter closings. He saw clearly in mind her prim photo, under which she had added one of her characteristic jingles. "In the old manner I've parodied every veranda and room, and jacarandas at Arrowhead in supernatural bloom." It did not matter. It did not matter. Destroy and forget. But a butterfly in the park, an orchid in a shop window, would revive everything with a dazzling inward shock of despair. His main industry consisted of research at the great granite-pillared public library, that admirable and formidable palace a few blocks from Cordula's cozy flat. One is irresistibly tempted to compare the strange longings and nauseous qualms that enter into the complicated ecstasies accompanying the making of a young writer's first book with childbearing. Vaughn had only reached the bridal stage. Then, to develop the metaphor, would come the sleeping car of messy defloration, then the first balcony of honeymoon breakfasts with the first wasp. In no sense could Cordula be compared to a writer's muse, But the evening stroll back to her apartment was pleasantly saturated with the afterglow and afterthought of the accomplished task and the expectation of her caresses. He especially looked forward to those nights when they had an elaborate repast sent up from Monaco, a good restaurant in the entresol of the tall building crowned by her penthouse and its spacious terrace. The sweet banality of their little ménage sustained him much more securely than the company of his constantly agitated and fiery father did at their rare meetings in town, or was to do during a fortnight in Paris before the next term it chose. Except gossip, gossamer gossip, Cordula had no conversation, and that also helped. She had instinctively realized very soon that she should never mention Ada or Ardis. He, on his part, accepted the evident fact that she did not really love him. Her small, dear, soft, well-padded and rounded body was delicious to stroke, and her frank amazement at the variety and vigor of his lovemaking anointed what still remained of poor Vaughn's crude, virile pride. She would doze off between two kisses. When he could not sleep, as now often happened, he retired to the sitting room and sat there, annotating his authors, or else he would walk up and down the open terrace, under a haze of stars, in severely restricted meditation, till the first tram car jangled and screeched in the dawning abyss of the city. When, in early September, Van Veen left Manhattan for Lute, he was pregnant.